Is your aging AC system ready for summer? Are you sure? Don't get caught when it's hot out. Instead, plan ahead with a free AC system inspection by Kelly's Heating and Cooling. Kelly's cares. So this spring, they're offering free home HVAC inspections. Appointments booked before the end of April might qualify for up to $8,900 back on a new high-efficiency, space-saving Daikin Fit system. So make sure you can take the heat this summer. Search for Kelly's Cooling online. Because they're more than hot air, Kelly's cares. Is your aging AC system ready for summer? Are you sure? Don't get caught when it's hot out. Instead, plan ahead with a free AC system inspection by Kelly's Heating and Cooling. Kelly's cares. So this spring, they're offering free home HVAC inspections. Appointments booked before the end of April might qualify for up to $8,900 back on a new high-efficiency, space-saving Daikin Fit system. So make sure you can take the heat this summer. Search for Kelly's Cooling online. Because they're more than hot air, Kelly's cares.
This is Wheel Bearings. I'm Dan Roth from Forbes.
I'm Sam Abual-Samage from Guidehouse Insights.
I'm Rebecca Lindland from Rebecca Drive.
Let's get to the garage, talk about cars. So, Rebecca, you are in the 2020 Buick Encore GX, and I want to know what differentiates the Encore GX from the rest of the Encore lineup. And because you're an Encore owner on your own, I want to see how the new one stacks up to, was it Coco?
Coco, yes. Right. So yes, so for our listeners who may not know, Coco is my personal vehicle. She's a 2015 Buick Encore, chocolate brown with butterscotch interior. And she's just such a good little car. I know people laugh at me, but I love my little Encore.
So why would they laugh at you?
Oh, because people mock me all the time for having a Buick Encore.
Because
I guess I'm supposed to have something cooler. I love her.
Is that just because you live in Greenwich, Connecticut?
No, it's actually my friends. It's my friends out on the West Coast.
Oh.
That mock me profusely.
Oh, I think, well, it's, yeah. And maybe part of it is because you're driving things like Aston Martins back to back.
Yeah. I could do it as well. But no, I think, you know, when you add, so the Encore GX is in the middle it's in between the Encore that's out today, but it's smaller than the Envision. So I sort of call it like the Goldilocks version. And it's really designed the Encore is small. So the Encore competes with like the Nissan Juke, the Jeep Renegade, the Honda HR-V, and then the Envision in Buick's mind, the Envision goes more towards the CR-V, the Tiguan, the RAV4, the Equinox, vehicles like that. And they see the Encore GX as competing a little bit more in that space, sort of in the middle of those two, between a compact SUV and a small SUV and a compact SUV.
But it's the same size as the existing Encore, right?
No, it's a little bit longer. It's a little bit bigger.
Oh, okay.
It is, just ever so slightly. It's a little bit beefier for sure. It felt, I'm trying to see if I can grab the dimensions. It is longer for sure. And it's a little bit wider also. It definitely felt like a larger vehicle.
There's 5 cubic feet more cargo space and 3 cubic feet. It's 5 cubic feet more than the Encore and 3 cubic feet smaller than the Envision. So that really, really tightly fits between the two.
So the other thing that they've done is they have moved the Encore down price-wise. They're not offering like leather in the Encore anymore. So they're really positioning the Encore as very much of an entry-level vehicle, whereas the Encore GX is more for a buyer like myself who wants some more creature comfort. And this thing definitely had a really nice level of creature comforts. So the other thing that they did, there's two separate engines. There's a 1.2 liter turbo and then 1.3 liter turbo. Very, very small differences. Frankly, I'm not quite sure why they even bothered with the 1.2 except for price point. So the 1.2, 137 horsepower, with 162 pounds foot of torque. The 1.3 liter, which is what I drove, has 155 horsepower, 174 pounds foot of torque. It was a CVT, actually, which is how you get the front wheel drive. I was surprised at how good the CVT was. I'm not a huge fan of CVTs. They whine worse than little Lucy, my cat. But this one was actually really good. And I appreciated it. It just didn't have that whininess to it. Now, the all-wheel drive has the 9-speed automatic. I haven't driven that one yet. So I'll be curious to see how that compares. But what I liked about the GX is, you know, this one was fully loaded, $34,000. It just, you know, it has a lot of safety features to it. It had super easy, seamless connectivity, which, you know me, I can break any kind of technology. And this one worked out really, really well. Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. Of course, it has, you know, the Wi-Fi that GM's had forever in their vehicles. And I don't know, it's just such a good little car. Like, you know, everyone I showed it to really thought it was nice looking. And again, for $34,000, I think it had a level of quietness and refinement that I don't always find in, say, the CRV, or the RAV4. And I really, really appreciated that. I think the fit and finish, the materials that they used, all of those features just, I don't know, I felt like I was really in a really nice premium vehicle, not a luxury vehicle, but pretty close to that, though. Like, just a good price point, I felt like. I really liked it.
When you talk about the connectivity, did you use, I'm assuming you used CarPlay and...
I used Android Auto.
Oh, okay. It wasn't wireless, right? It was, you plugged it in with a...
You do plug it in. But it worked very, very well. Unfortunately, I didn't use Amazon Alexa because I'm really curious to see how that, because I haven't been able to figure that out quite yet. Yeah. But, and you can also do multiple Bluetooth pairings. So it's funny because, like, when my nephew Jake, when he's been driving Coco a lot, but when I get in the car, then the car, you know, it sort of fights for pairing, right? Because his phone is paired, my phone is paired. It's like, whose phone's paired? On the GX, you can actually have multiple phones paired at the same time.
Right. So you could use one source for like music and then another for phone.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, or, you know, if you've got a couple, you know, and you know, the driver wants to have their phone hooked up, you know, to use as the phone, you know, or even, you know, to switch back and forth between the music sources you're playing, you know, in order to maintain marital bliss, you know, to let somebody else take control.
Yeah. That takes a while to learn. I'm curious about the powertrains too. Like you say, like, they're right on top of each other. It really is like a 10 pound foot difference in torque, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
So what they did was they actually added more technology to the 1.3 liter. So it actually gets better fuel economy. It gets better highway. It actually has a better 0-60. It does have higher horsepower. I really think that 1.2 is strictly for price point. It's strictly so that they can, you know, start it at a low price.
That's crazy to me that, like, adding an extra engine that they don't expect anybody to buy is going to allow them to make it cheaper.
I don't know.
It's, you know, what's odd is that the price differential between the base GX and the base regular Encore is only $900. It's $23,200 for the Encore and $24,100 for the GX. You know, so I mean, it's not a huge price differential. And it almost seems like, like you said, Dan, it would have made more sense to just have the one powertrain, even if they maybe did two different, you know, offer it, you know, base model, base front wheel drive model with the CVT, and, you know, the up level trims with the 9-speed or something like that. You know, but having these different combinations is odd.
Yes, it is. I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Encore goes away at some point in time. I don't know. Yes, it doesn't really make sense.
It is probably a transition.
And are you guys having audio issues with me?
Nope.
Does it sound weird?
Nope.
Okay. I don't know what's going on.
We never have issues with you.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said we never have issues with you.
No, I know. I am the queen of no issues. Oh my gosh. Okay. So it definitely steps on top of each other for sure. But I imagine that the encore will probably go away fairly soon.
Well, you know, I think what makes it a good fit for a lot of people, and probably be the reason why you actually bought one with your own money, is that it's a good size. It's still handy. This would be a hatchback if it weren't a crossover, you know, and it's just a handy car.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I thought it was nice looking. I thought it was a great price point, and my mom could get in and out of it easily.
Right. That's really important, right? The crossover thing has kept ride height low like cars, but has brought up that hip point so that it's easier to get in and out of. Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, I thought it was just a really good, solid car. And again, the level of refinement I feel like is there, whereas I don't always feel like that in some of their competitors. Mazda is probably the closest. But, you know, I complain a lot about road noise and such and NVH. And that's why I gravitate towards Buick, because it's such a nice, quiet ride. And I really do appreciate that.
But, you know, they are a doctor's car. Do you feel like you can cure things? I think, too, looking at it, and this sort of ties into the car I'm driving this week. What did you think of the interior design and materials? One of the things I actually like about the Encore is that it doesn't have a screen that's like a afterthought, you know, it's integrated more smoothly.
I love an integrated screen. Now, I will say I didn't like, and this is very picky, but I had to use it a couple of times. I didn't like where the hazard button was. It's all the way on the right side, and I had to reach, like lunge for it. And there were times when there's a construction zone right on my way home on the highway, and sometimes they keep changing it so people don't really know what it's doing. Like every lane, you know, every day a lane is different. And, you know, the people that are driving these days are driving very aggressively. And so there have been times when I have to throw on my hazards because we're stopping suddenly and it really lunges over there. But otherwise, I thought that it was really, really ergonomically designed very well. I do love that integrated screen. I agree with you, Dan. I hate when it's sort of just like stuck on, like, oh yeah, we forgot there's a screen here. And I always think, well, someday maybe we'll just put our own phones there. But I think the interior is really nice, huge sunroof, just easy access. Everything sort of just went where I expected it to be, which I liked. The only thing, and I will tell you, I've told you this already, I would have loved to have had ventilated seats. So it has heated seats and heated steering wheel, but I would have very much appreciated to have ventilated seats.
Okay. I wish Buick would try to sell them. it sounds like a decent car, and my experience in that sort of class of GM vehicle is that they're pretty good, actually.
They really are. I mean, and that engine, you know, the 1.3 liter, it has plenty of pickup, you know, certainly didn't have any hesitation on the highway, and again, that CVT was fantastic. So hopefully in the wintertime I'll get an all-wheel drive with a 9-speed.
And when do we ever say a CVT is fantastic?
Seriously, right?
Pretty much this and the Nissan Maxima.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yep. I haven't driven a Maxima in a long time. Now that I think about that. All right, we won't diverge. You also had the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid, which I drove not too long ago, and I was really impressed by that. What did you think?
That thing was fabulous.
What did you get for mileage with it?
Oh, you know what? Shoot, I meant to look it up. Let me just talk to you because I know I did really, really well with the mileage. I want to say I got like 48 and a half.
I got something high with it too.
Yeah. And that was not trying. Like I was not hypermiling at all. Right. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. What I loved it, because I actually have a Prius this week. What I love about the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid is that it is a hybrid with absolutely no compromises. You are like, it has every luxury. I mean, the Prius has, it has a, it doesn't have a power seat. It has, you know, it has the manual seat, a fully manual seat, and it has the manual brake. I mean, it's a lot of compromises, and we'll talk about that in the next episode. But this Sonata was just absolutely fantastic. It was just beautiful looking. I got to really appreciate the new design on it. I think actually I would have loved to have had it be a hatchback because it has that really cool roof line and cool sloping roof. I feel like they could have kind of snuck one in.
there's a lot of those cars that you know, sedans, modern sedans that really should be hatchbacks. And why they don't build them that way, I will never know.
Well, especially because they can do them, you know, so many of them nowadays, you can sneak it in, you know, right? And the other thing too that I really appreciated on the Sonata was the different drive modes. You could actually feel the difference when you were driving it in sport mode. Like, it made a difference. And that was a lot of fun because, again, a lot of times you don't get that impression. Like, it's like, okay, whatever. But this time it was actually like I really felt the difference. And that was fun. That was nice.
Yeah, I agree, though. Like, you know, Hyundai, they do it already with the, I mean, it's not Hyundai, it's the Kia Stinger, but they had a hatchback in that.
And yes.
It doesn't harm the look of the car at all to have that big hatch hidden there. And I did find when I had the Sonata Hybrid, I was impressed with the hybrid stuff doesn't get in the way like it used to. You know, we've been trying out hybrid sedans for decades now. One of the first press cars I ever got was an Altima hybrid. It was
that's so unfortunate.
It was fine for the time. Well, no, actually, no, for wasn't. The time it was actually not either, but it felt like a project.
An unfinished one.
But you don't, you know, like the batteries used to be in the trunk. You'd lose your pass through or your fold down seats. Like, none of that applies to the Sonata. You're right. It doesn't really compromise at all. Where you compromise is the style because of that fast roof line. You wind up with a trunk that, you know, it's not a bad size trunk. I think it's like 15 cubic feet or
but so. Yeah, it's a small opening.
Yeah, you just can't get anything in.
That's why all these things should be hatchbacks. So, you know, you open it up, you have this big opening, you know, you have lots of space in there, but you also have the ability to access that space, which is a problem with sedans.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's.
Or you could just do a station wagon, you know, which would be the correct approach. But.
I mean, a Sonata wagon would look pretty great.
Yeah.
Because the car itself. And it's funny, too. Like, this is a car that when I first saw it in pictures, I was like, it's kind of fishy looking. When you see it in person, it looks a lot more striking. There's a lot of detail in the design that you don't necessarily pick up. Or just like a lot of thoughtfulness, not necessarily detail, because it's pretty clean, but there's a lot of thoughtfulness in it. Just the way that, you know, there's that body line sort of on the lower part of the doors. And if you look, you know, it's got a deeper draw at the front edge of the front door and the rear edge of the rear door. So it's like it thins out in the middle a little bit because so it looks like the body works and it has a little bit of a bulge in the middle. And it's just like a simple, subtle thing like that. But it that gives life to the sheet metal. And it I thought it's a really striking design in person when you sort of stand back and contemplate it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's really, really nice. And I have to correct myself. It looks like I primarily averaged overall, I was at 46.
That's about what I got with it. And again,
what a slacker.
Yeah. Now there was a trip though. One of my first trips, I got 49. So that must've been mostly highway. But still, I mean, just phenomenal, but you're right. I mean, the styling of it is really high end. It's a looker. I mean, people turn around and look at it and like, what is that thing? And you know, the front end, I think it's very kind of shark-like, but in a good way, like it's very expressive. You know, because there's been some shark like attempts that are not that great.
It's a good shark.
Not bad. Leave it to the sharks.
You know, but I also found the sort of the flip side of that as well. It's not offensive. Inside, its cabin, in materials wise and stuff, isn't quite as high end as its design, you know, and that's not bad. Every car has to sort of have a compromise and has to be built for a price. I liked the ergonomics and stuff. How did you feel about the sort of materials and then operating the car?
Yeah, no. Well, one of the things I really liked was the side cameras where it lights up your blind spots, the digital dash.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and how it lights up the, and I thought that, so you put your turn signal on and the video, there's a video that starts and it's basically, it'll illuminate and show you a video of your blind sides on either side, which was really cool. And the other thing I love is the little reminder when the car in front of you starts going, moving forward, it dings and says the vehicle in front of you is moving. And yeah. I think it says, I just love that. I thought that was really cool. The other thing is that when I stopped at one point and pulled over to take pictures and I closed, so the car was on, I closed the door and then I got back in and it says vehicle will be turned off automatically. And it basically says in 30 minutes. So, you know, how some people have left their hybrid on, not realizing the car is still basically on because it's quiet. So it will turn itself off in 30 minutes, which I think is, again, a very thoughtful feature in case, you know, because it is easy to do when you've got a lot on your mind that you don't realize that you haven't turned off your car. I thought the interior, I liked it. I thought the materials were fine. You know, it's for $36,000. It's a really, really nice vehicle.
Yeah, I think they're fine, but they're just fine. You know, and the design is good. Inside and out, I can't fault the design. I like the way it's executed. But, you know, if we're going to be picky.
Yeah, I've driven worse. I've seen worse interiors for sure at that price point too.
Yeah, no, I would say, you know, this is very close to the class of the field, which I still think is the Mazda 6 in terms of its interior. You know, this is very nearly as good. And, you know, I agree with you, Rebecca. I like the thing that Hyundai is doing with the side cameras. And displaying when you put on the turn signal, displaying that in the digital instrument cluster. And, you know, they do that. They have that in the Palisade as well. And I think they'll be rolling that out to other models. And, you know, compared to, you know, it's a similar concept to what Honda has done with their lane watch system in the past, which is what we have in our Civic.
So much better.
This is actually useful because it's in front of you. It's not over in the center screen. And it's on both sides. So,
right.
You know, both on the left and the right, whereas the Honda lane watch was only for the right-hand camera. So basically all you could see was if you were too close to the curb, you know, when you're making a right-hand turn. You know, other than that, it doesn't really tell you anything useful. Whereas this, you know, actually shows you, you know, what you would see if your mirrors were perfectly aimed.
And it's great resolution too. Like it is like, it's like, oh my gosh, you are right there. You know, that's the other thing too, is that all the cameras and the rear camera, all of that was super high resolution. And just again, like there's just that really, really good quality for a really good price and just incredible, incredible fuel economy. And that's what to me was the best part of it. So you're just not compromising, you know, just because you prioritize fuel economy.
Yeah, I think the only thing you compromise on right now with it is you can't get all-wheel drive.
Right. And actually, as I said, I have a Prius and it actually is all-wheel drive.
Oh, you have the all-wheel drive Prius. There you go.
Yes.
But they make you pay.
They do make you pay, exactly.
Because it looks like a Prius.
Tune in next week.
Yeah. But the Prius is a hatchback too. So like that's interesting, you know, like the Sonata is a little nicer, certainly a little more stylish. It's a little more traditional sedan.
It's a lot more stylish.
It's a lot more. I mean,
everything about the Sonata is better.
Except its utility, perhaps. And so if you're buying a car to use it, you know, see, I don't know. I'd rather be in the Sonata.
Yeah. the Sonata doesn't hurt your eyes every time you walk up to it.
Wow. I guess I was going to say even still you don't like the Prius, but the Prius did not.
The Prius drives fine, but, you know, it's hideous.
I mean, it got pretty ugly for this generation. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's atrocious.
No. I when I was taking pictures earlier today of the Prius, I saw another one, and it was actually that same, because this one is like that. They call it sea glass, but it's that like insipid pale green. And so there was an older one, and it looked just the same.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. You have to conserve with your conspicuous consumption rather than conspicuously. Well, you know what? Let's stick with Hyundai Group here, and we'll skip to Sam. You're in the 2020 Genesis G90, and we touched on this car when I talked to my friends John Paul and George Kennedy. I did a little mini episode, which we can put out in the next few days. But we picked this as the New England Motor Press Association sort of luxury car of the official luxury car of New England. Or we have categories. We do the winter car of the year, and we broke it into categories this year. And so the G90 won. And I haven't had a chance to drive it yet, but man, it's good looking. I do
still find that grill overwhelming. I think it's too much grill for this car. But aside from that, everything else about it, I think, looks great, you know, for a big, you know, classical luxury sedan. You know, I think its overall proportions are fantastic. I love the wheels that were on the car that I had on the, you know, the one I had was the rear-wheel drive premium with 3.3-liter turbo.
Does it have those flat wheels? Rims are very, like...
They're flat in the middle, but there's, you know, like a lace pattern around the perimeter. I think they look really good on this one.
It's so funny because we have similar taste in houses and furniture and things, but those rims, that is just not my jam.
Well, you know what they remind me of? They remind me of like Mercedes wheels from the 80s and 90s.
Yes, maybe that's the problem.
They're flat, like they have a high positive offset. So they don't have much dish to them. So it's a look.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, go. Sorry,
I think it works on this car, you know. And I just dropped a photo in the Slack so you can see which one I had.
That's exactly the one that I had on the drive. And it's same color and everything.
Yeah, you know. So I do still think that, you know, especially, you know, when you look at the, you know, the photos that I had, you can the way the sun was hitting it, you can very clearly see where the opening is in the grill, you know, where there's an actual opening for airflow versus where kind of mistake, the grill is. Yeah. And it's, you know, if you're going to do a massive grill like that, you know, do it in a way that, you know, you hide that, or, you know, cheap. So it's not so obvious. Yeah. I mean,
And I'm sure you'll post it on the site, but that picture in particular, because I have a picture on my site from the launch back in December, I think, and it's not visible at all. But again, it's just an angle thing. But you're right, that looks not great.
Yeah. But aside from that, I really like the rest of this car. You know, well, first of all, the back seat in this thing is just enormous. It's huge.
It's a living room.
Yeah, there's so much space in there. You know, and, you know, this one has, you know, the seats that you can adjust individually and everything. And there's the massive center armrest that you can fold down that's got controls on there for the climate control and the audio and everything. And, you know, and in the front, you know, the way that, you know, they have the fit and finish and the materials and the way everything's integrated in this thing, I think, you know, is just really, really nice. And Rebecca, when you and I were at the LA show and we were sitting in the GV80 and you were commenting on the knobs, you know, the knurling on the knobs. Well, the G90, when it got its refresh this year, they did the same stuff to that. So, you know, the center control knob, you know, has the really nice machined knurling around the perimeter of it and on some of the other switches, so the climate control switches and the volume knobs, things like that. So it really feels like a precision instrument. You know, if you've ever had a really nice pair, you know, set of calipers, you know, things like that, you know, really good tools. They feel like that. And that's what this feels like. And, you know, the interior trim, the wood trim, you know, I have never been a fan of high gloss wood veneer finishes in cars. I think, I don't know, that even on a Rolls Royce, you know, or a Bentley, I've always thought they looked kind of tacky.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love, you know, matte finish, open pore wood veneer. And, you know, this has it across the dashboard and the center console. And I think it looks and feels great, really feels authentic. You know, and this is a big car and, you know, it drives like a big car. It doesn't feel like a G70 by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, it doesn't wallow, but it definitely feels softer than either a G80 or a G70. You know, it's got a certain softness to it, but it's not. What were you going to say?
Who among us doesn't?
Well, because I, in my review, I wrote, it's an exercise in floatiness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I remember, you know, growing up in the 80s, you know, 70s and 80s, you know, and driving in, you know, Cadillacs of that era. And I mean, those things, you know, they just wallowed all over the place. This is nothing like that. By modern standards, it's floaty, but, you know, it's still reasonably well controlled. You know, it's the G90 is not the car that I would choose for myself from the Genesis lineup. You know, that would be probably the G70. But, you know, if you're looking for a big, massive luxury sedan, you know, this is a great alternative to something like a 7 Series or, you know, even a, you know, a lower end S-Class. And it's a hell of a lot more affordable. You know, this one, you know, was pretty much loaded. I can't remember. Do they offer all-wheel drive on this? I don't know if
yes,
they do or not.
All-wheel drive is available.
Yeah, this one was rear-wheel drive, but it had pretty much everything else on it. You know, it came to $73,000, which, you know, is not inexpensive, but, you know, compared to something comparable from Germany, you know, it's probably a good $20,000 to $25,000 cheaper, if not more.
Yeah, the one that I tested was 72.2, which actually excluded the roughly $1,000 in destination. And then the top trim is 79.2 with destination, and that's the G90 5.0 Ultimate. So that's with the 5.0 liter V8, which I don't think is worth it. I mean,
the twin turbo V6 has got more than enough power for this car, 365 horsepower. You know, you're not going to be driving it like a sports car, but it's got more than enough thrust to, you know, to accelerate, you know, when you're merging on highways and things like that.
Yeah. I think the interior is absolutely beautiful. I agree with you. I love that matte open pore wood. I think that's, and just the leather, all those fit and finishes, the touch points, I think are really, really lovely. I do think that, you know, it's almost generic in that, I want a little bit more tech feel to it, I think, but that's not what this customer wants anyway. No. So, you know, keeping in mind who the customer is, I do think that if you want something that is a little bit more athletic, you would go towards like the Audi A8. But as you say, you are going to pay more.
Or even the G80.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the G80 is fantastic. And there's, I think, a new one coming out shortly as well.
Yeah, they've already shown it in Korea.
And then the GV80 is coming out, their SUV, which I'm very excited to see as well. So I think I think that there's a lot of good things about the Genesis brand. And as Dan said, you know, it certainly is incredibly award-winning across the board. You know, all three of their sedans have done really, really well. In a variety of tests and consumer surveys.
The only place where they've failed is in sales.
Right.
Which well, that's because they don't have the GV80. I think that everything really hinges on the success of that one.
Yeah.
It does, but they also, you know, they've done some good marketing. I like the fact that they're sponsoring the PGA, things like that. You know, I've told them this so I can say this, their website is brutal, but getting people to the website, I think, is part of the challenge. And, you know, people, there was a lot of confusion with the Genesis name, the brand, because it started out as a model. And so that's caused them, you know, that that has caused them some delays. Erwin Raphael, who was a really fine executive for the brand, has moved now, gotten promoted up to Hyundai corporate. So, you know, there's some, and of course, Manfred Fitzgerald was, I don't know what happened, separated from the company, we'll call it. You know, he had come from Lamborghini and was very, from an aesthetic standpoint, he very much fit the brand really well. And, you know, did what he could with the products that he had. And it's just unfortunate that they didn't let him execute further on the, you know, on the GV80 and such.
Yeah, they brought over Mark Del Rosso last fall from Audi to run Genesis North America. So, you know, we'll see what he can do with it. There is one other little detail that I thought was really cool in this G90. In the back, there's power sunshades for the side windows on the back doors and also for the rear window. And one of the nice little details is if you have the rear sunshade up, you know, so it's blocking off the light from the back window. When you put it in reverse, it automatically retracts while you're backing up.
Oh, that is cool.
And then as soon as you put it back in drive, it goes back up again.
These are the things that I think Genesis and Hyundai, and to some extent Kia as well, they do really well. These small touches that bring an emotional appeal. Like that's emotionally satisfying when that happens. It's you know, sort of like the digital dash, you know, side view camera that we talked about. Like that's emotionally pleasing. That says, I like that. That's a good thing. And that's what I think this brand does. All three of these of the Hyundai Group brands do really, really well is that those little emotionally satisfying touches. So I just have to say a quick word too while we're on the topic of Genesis. So Luke Donkerwolk, whose name I never say right, he resigned back in April, and I just want to wish him well. He's a really, really good guy, and I think he's going through some personal issues that I won't get into, but I hope he is resting at home comfortably and doing okay because he's a really, really good guy. But he had to resign more for personal reasons than anything. So keep him in mind in your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, when we launch our car brand, we'll keep him in mind to, you know, come design it.
Yeah. Come design for us for sure. Right.
All right. Well, let's finish up the driveway / garage. I managed to get myself into a Cadillac XT4 350T with the sport package. So it has some blacked out trim. You know, the grill and the window trim and stuff. And it's a nice shade of like pumpkin spice orange.
Oh, I love that one.
This is a really, really well styled car. I mean, it's one of those designs, again, the more you stand back and contemplate it, the more you see the thought that was put into the design. And it's really refined and really just fantastic looking.
How's the interior?
You know, the top
okay.
the top third is Cadillac, and then the bottom two thirds is Chevy. And that's sort of the running theme. You know, I think it does a lot of things right. You know, the XT4 is the right size. It's priced pretty well. It looks great. It's even driving. It's half good, half bad. The half good is that, you know, the controls all feel good. The weighting of the steering is like dead on. There's even this, you know, the control stocks and stuff all feel pretty good. The ergonomics are really good. I liked that. Very much like you said with the Encore GX, stuff just works. And, you know, even the infotainment is pretty good especially when you compare it to, you know, like the Lexus NX that it's going to be cross-shopped with. That's just not good.
Yeah.
The areas I think where it sort of leaves a little to be desired it's a little loud in terms of the engine note, and it's not a great engine note. So it either needs to be more refined sounding or just quieter. It's almost like they went a little too much toward the sporty idea. Like it looks athletic, so it has to deliver that feeling. And I think it can look as athletic as they want to make it look, but really they should make it smooth. And it just feels over eager when you drive it, you know, it's noticeably downshifts at stop signs.
Like it's trying too hard.
Yeah. It's just like, chill. I understand. Yeah. You know, the engine is great. I think it's a 2-liter turbo, four cylinder. Fantastic. Lots of power. And I did find that if you actually drive it in anger, you know, fling it around a turn and put your foot down, it handles pretty well. It'll boil up the front tire, even though it has the twin clutch, the dual clutch all wheel drive. But it's, you know, predictable in terms of handling so it delivers on the sport if you drive it that way, but nobody's going to drive it that way. So really,
therein lies the problem. You know, you talked about the engine note, you know, and it'd be one thing if they tried to make, you know, just the sport sound like that.
Right.
The problem is, you know, the premium Lux sounds the same way. You know, I went on the XT4 launch drive out in Seattle a couple of years ago. And, you know, I got a chance to drive both the premium Lux and the sport. And from the noise, the NVH perspective, there was no real difference between the two. The engine was just as loud in the premium Lux. And, you know, that's the fundamental, that the NVH is the single biggest complaint I had about the XT4, other than maybe the value proposition. But, you know, both road noise and the engine, you know, were too noisy, I thought, for a car at that price point in that segment.
Yeah, it's weird.
Isn't that annoying? Because they do Buick so well.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, what's up with that?
And it's weird. Like, I was actually checking to see if the Encore and the XT4 share platforms, and they don't. This actually, it feels like exactly what I thought it felt like, which is a sort of premiumized Equinox.
Yeah.
which is like, it's fine, but you don't want it to be fine. You want it to be like, wow, that's good. Yeah. And they made the suspension too stiff. So while it does deliver on the handling, again, just make it smoother, make it go over bumps a little better. Because it's not like the structure is soft, you know, it feels solid. So I find it weird to be an enthusiast and a driving enthusiast and to be saying like, this one really feels like it needs more damping in all aspects. Like it just needs to be a little bit calmer.
There, the premium Lux is a little better. The premium luxury, gives you a slightly softer tuning. And the ride quality is a little better, but it's still noisy.
Yeah. And that's like, I guess I could probably get used to the engine note. But it's not a great engine note. You know, it sounds pretty good from outside. You know, it sounds like a sporty four cylinder. And I just feel like maybe they were a little confused and they kind of missed their target. Because you got to understand that this is going to be a vehicle that skews probably towards women buyers of a certain age. And that's a wide cohort. You know, you've got women buyers from 35 to like 80. That are going to look at this thing because it's just the perfect size. It's roomy behind the back seat. It's got the power hatch. It's comfy. It's easy to use. It's easy to drive. It's a Cadillac. It looks really good. Like it hits all the high notes, and then you drive it and you're like, meh, it's kind of Chevy.
So, well, it's funny because the quote that they have on the site says, "We were successful in capturing the Cadillac essence in a really small athletic package." A really small? I don't like.
Well, by Cadillac standards, it is small.
Yeah,
but really small? Like, I don't know. That doesn't make me want to buy it.
Yeah, and I think too, like the athletic, they should not have focused on the athleticism because I think that does them a disservice. That's going to be a turnoff. It is a turnoff for me, and I like cars that are athletic. This is not the car to be like that. And everything else is pretty good. You know, once you're in it and you close the door, that top third of materials is nice. Like I said, you know, the bottom of the door panels, under the armrest, that can be less expensive. The problem that GM has with all their press cars lately too, is all the interiors are black. So I can't really tell how it's going to present For me, the different colors actually make it look a little bit more premium, especially if there's a nice rich brown or a tan in there. It makes it feel richer. That may be my psychology.
No, there's a lot of black in there.
Yeah.
And black can look really cheap. Looking online. Is that the only, I'm wondering.
They may be really restrictive with the colors.
Yeah, which I understand. You know, I appreciate that for cost and simplicity. But as you say, like that interior. Okay, so they have, so in the sport, they do have, they've got Sedona, jet black leatherette.
Yeah.
Jet black leather. And they've got a couple of whites. But you're right. The dash does not really change that much. And the problem is the competition is so fierce in this segment that you have to give people a reason to purchase.
Well, I think that the details have been sweated. You know, it's very comfortable. And I do like the material choice on the seats and the dash and the stuff you touch is good. Mm-hmm. Nothing there felt cheap to me. I like that integrated screen in the dash. Its tech is good, actually. It integrates with CarPlay. It's fast. It connects really easy. It has wireless CarPlay, which is, this doesn't have wireless CarPlay. I looked for it, but it doesn't have it. But that's funny to me because I prefer wired CarPlay anyway, because you just plug it in with a cable and you're done. Wireless CarPlay gets you back to Bluetooth where you got to fiddle with stuff. I'm interested to what you say about the value proposition, Sam, because it seems like a good value to me at 50 grand.
Well, the thing is, though, you know, if you, especially, you know, if you look at the base price, you know, about 36,000, you know, it seems fine. But when you actually start adding on equipment and then comparing it to competitors, like, you know, especially the Sport, you know, the clear competitor to that one is the Acura RDX. And, you know, when I did the launch drive, you know, I compared it, you know, with the same equipment, the XT4 came to like 56,000 compared to the same, roughly the same equipment on an RDX A spec, you know, which was $48,000. So it was like $8,000 more.
Yeah, but you don't have to fight with the Acura infotainment system.
That's true.
But you know, the thing is, you know, there's a lot of stuff that other manufacturers put on, you know, as standard equipment, especially in terms of like driver assist features. The Cadillac is still nickel and diming customers.
Yeah, which drives me crazy.
There's a lot of stuff that they, for whatever reason, they're still refusing to include as standard equipment. You know, things like, you know, collision warning and lane departure assist and, you know, adaptive cruise control that you can get as standard equipment on cars that are, you know, one third of the price or half the price, you know, and you're paying an extra $1,000 or $1,500 for some of these things on the Cadillac. And that's where the value proposition starts to fall apart, is when you start using the options list. It gets very expensive very quickly compared to the other vehicles in the segment.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. And I think that the RDX actually probably outdrives it without being as harsh. Mm. The Cadillac looks better, a lot better. If you buy on style, I like the RDX, but I'm forgiving a lot on the XT4 because I do think it's such a fantastic design. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of it feels very sobby.
Not crying, but like old brand.
So. Yeah.
Like the 9-4X.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, that was, I wouldn't be surprised if that was, you know, that there were people that worked on the 9-4X that were involved in this thing, you know, and still, you know, were sad that the 9-4X went away without ever really having a chance in the market. You know, they only built about 2,000 or so of them before Saab was discontinued. And every once in a while around Michigan here, you can spot them. You spot one on the road because they did sell a couple thousand of them. But, you know, it's unfortunate, but you're right. You know, this does have kind of that same feel as the 9-4X did.
Yeah.
Very similar size.
It's good. I think it's in a tough segment though. And so we'll see if it's good enough to really help them stand out. But I'm impressed with it overall. I think that it is really, it's what Cadillac needs to be doing. You know, they spent 10 or 12 years fiddling around perfecting the sedan that nobody's going to buy.
Yeah.
And they've done a really good job at it. Now they need to bring that.
Well, one element of the design that I really like that is really functional is the side glass. You know, if you look at it, you'll notice that the side glass on the rear doors actually extends back quite far. And, you know, relative to where the back seats are. And a lot of cars, a lot of modern, you know, crossovers in this segment, you know, you sit in that back seat and you turn your head to the side and you see the pillar there. You don't have glass right beside you.
Yeah, that C pillar is huge in some in some cases.
And in this case, you know, the rear side glass, you know, the glass on the rear doors extends back quite a ways. So when you're sitting in the back seat, you look out, you can actually see out of the car, which is, I think, really nice for anybody that's sitting in the back.
Well, and that goes to the design aesthetic also. Mm-hmm. And I think I agree. It's great for kids too, you know, which, and for regular people, for adults as well.
Listen, kids are not regular people. That is true.
No, you're right. So, I mean, that, and, you know, to Dan's point, that's part of the design aesthetic. I think it's a beautiful looking vehicle. I like the headlamps a lot. I like the tail lamps. I think they're really cool. It's definitely distinctive on the road. I agree though. I think that focusing on the athleticism, when it then in turn compromises the other parts of the experience, is not really where this vehicle needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know what? Retune the suspension and we'll all be happy. But and you know, I think price wise too, this is crappy to say, but it's not gonna sell for sticker. It's gonna be rebates.
Yeah. But everybody's gonna price is bad though. I mean, the base is 35, premium is 40. That's a big jump, and then sport is 41. You get a lot for the premium luxury, that middle trim line, and I'm always a fan of middle trim. I think that it's always a good compromise, but
there's still a lot of stuff that's not included at that price.
Right. I'm surprised with the sport. It doesn't have the adaptive sport suspension. You got to pay like another $2,000 or $1,800 for that, which
That's annoying.
Sport, you know,
that the accountants have the last word kind of thing is very annoying.
So let's dive right into the F-150 then. It's Monday now, but Thursday night, Ford unveiled the new F-150, 2021 F-150. And, you know, as usual, it's all new. And, you know, I wish they wouldn't say that. You know, funny thing is you look at it, especially if you look at it from the side, it doesn't actually look any different. You know, I've been seeing these things on the road here, you know, with light camo on, just the wrap on the front and the back for more than 6 months. And the first time I saw one, you know, I had to do a double take to figure out, is that the 2021 or not, you know, because, you know, it looked just like the 2020. And there are details, especially when you see the front without any camo on it. The front definitely looks different. You know, they have revised the front end. The sheet metal is all different on the sides. It doesn't look dramatically different, but it is, you know, new dyes, you know, so that...
Is the average consumer really going to appreciate this? Because they don't look that different.
Probably not.
I think, though, that's sort of the point.
Yeah.
Because people are so religious about their trucks that...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Ford sold over 900,000 F-Series last year.
Yeah, the stats on, like, when they compared it to the iPhone, I mean, those are fantastic stats. I get that. And it's a handsome truck. I mean, it looks great.
It does. And the outgoing one actually was one of the better looking ones over the last however many years, too. What was that? Gordon Plato, who designed the last one. And it came from a show car.
And this one.
It just looked great. And this looks really good, too.
Yeah. Ehab Kaoud is the chief engineer for North American Trucks now. And I'm not sure if he was the design lead for the F-150, but he was the one who was involved in the briefing last week and talked about it. And, you know, it does look good. I mean, and it, you know, it looks like a truck, which is what you expected. Like
that's the thing. You look across town at GM, and I know that those designs are polarizing, but they look a lot better than they did a couple of years ago. And then Ram is always a style leader. So
But the thing that's really important about this truck is not the way it looks on the outside. It's all the stuff that's under the skin and also in the cabin. You know, obviously, you know, because of the current situation with the pandemic, they couldn't do a live in-person reveal the way they had planned. And originally this one was supposed to be, we were supposed to see this back in April, I think. Yeah, April was when they originally scheduled the backgrounder for this. And, you know, so it was all done online. You know, all we've seen is photos of it, but the interior does look much better than before. You know, one of the complaints I think we've all had about the F-150 is that while the interior is very functional, it has felt kind of cheap, especially compared to the Ram, you know, hard plastics, and it never felt up to the same level of premium, even in a Limited or King Ranch, it never felt to the same level as a corresponding Ram. And this one, at least from the photos, looks like it's a lot closer. We'll see when we actually see it in person, but it definitely looks a lot better. And they've done some really interesting design things. Like one of the things they talked about was the fact that a lot of truck users, you know, especially, you know, people use it as a work truck, they use their computer in the truck. They use a laptop in the truck. And, you know, in the past, you know, a lot of them have, you know, gotten these brackets that you can mount your laptop on that hangs over the center console. What they did for this new F-150 is when you put it in park, you know, they found from their consumer research that truck buyers actually really like to have a traditional type of shifter on the center console, not a push button or a rotary knob setup. They wanted the traditional shifter, but they also wanted that console space. So they made it so that when the truck is in park, you can then fold down the shifter into a little cavity in front of it. So it makes it's out of the way. And then the top half of the center armrest folds over. So you have a big flat work surface available to you that you can use to write on or put your computer on there, whatever you want to do. You know, so little details like that are really important in this thing.
That's really cool. That's a very, very clever. It's a great way. And I see what you mean on some of the photos. It's a great way to meet a customer's needs when it's, and especially, as you say, like when it's appropriate, like if you're putting it in a park, rather than having somebody fumble with, you know, trying to use the cup holders or whatever. And I do see they actually have cup holders behind it. So you can move your drinks to right behind that. So if you do have like a cup of coffee or something next to the shifter, there's actually cup holders behind what becomes that table. That's really, really clever design. I like that.
Yeah. And another interesting detail in the interior is a pop-up lockable storage bin underneath the rear seat. So you can fold up the rear seat, you know, as you always have been able to in the crew cabs, and have a large flat floor area. But then in the floor area, you can pop up a storage bin and put stuff in there. And then when you put the seat down, you can actually lock the seat with the key.
Oh, that's clever.
So you can store stuff in there and it's locked in. And you can actually lock either side from the left or the right independently. So you can have one side that's locked and the other side that's not, if you want easier access to some stuff, but you want to keep other stuff secured. So you can, you know, if you're not using it for storage, you can fold that down, have that whole area, for cargo inside the cabin, or use that and have it lockable for security. Really cool stuff. Powertrain wise, same five engines you have now from the 3.3-liter naturally aspirated V6, the 2.7 and the 3.5 EcoBoost, the 5-liter V8, and the 3-liter diesel. All have gotten some upgrades. But now you also have, in addition to EcoBoost, you have PowerBoost. Which is the new hybrid. So it's basically the same hybrid system that's on the Explorer, 35 kilowatt motor paired with the 10 speed automatic. But where the Explorer puts the hybrid with the 3.3 liter naturally aspirated V6, the F-150 gets it with the 3.5 EcoBoost. And they're saying this is going to be the most powerful and highest torque light-duty truck on the market when it comes up. So presumably that means it's going to be, you know, more than the 450 horsepower that's in the Raptor today. And, you know, more, certainly more than the 400 plus horsepower you get from the V8s and the Ram and the GM trucks. And it'll have over 12,000 pounds of towing capacity with the hybrid, which is something that when GM did their two mode hybrids on their pickups 10 years ago, they only got 6,000 pounds of towing capability. So this is going to have, you know, no compromise on the towing, which is good. And then the other thing that they have is something that they actually first talked about a couple of years ago when they first said they were going to do the hybrid pickup, is an onboard generator. You know, a lot of work truck users have to carry along a gas generator to power their tools and stuff at a work site. For the hybrids, it's going to have standard what they call power on demand. So the base setup on the hybrid, you get 2.4 kilowatt output, and there's going to be three 120 volt AC plugs in the back corner of the bed that you can use to plug in your tools and equipment. And then there's an optional 7.2 kilowatt output version, you know, which is enough to pretty much power most of your house. And that, in addition to the AC plugs, that'll also have a 240 volt outlet on there, you know, to power your really big tools, your MIG welder,
to power your electric vehicle charger.
Yeah. So, you know, when you come across a Tesla that's standard and stranded. Thank you. Stranded on the side of the road with a dead battery, you can plug them in and charge them up.
That's a really cool feature, though. So, will that feature only be available on hybrid?
That will be on the hybrids. On the gas engines, you'll also be able to get a built-in power on demand generator, but that's only going to be 2 kilowatt output. So that's going to be a little bit different system from what's in the hybrid, because the hybrid's actually using the hybrid motor, the 35 kilowatt motor for the hybrid system. And on the hybrid, you know, if you're using the 2.4 kilowatt version, it can actually run all that stuff off the battery for at least for as long as the battery's got charge, you know, and then it'll automatically start the engine. With the gas engines, obviously it's going to be running the engine all the time when you're using that. But, you know, that's still going to be probably cheaper to run, more efficient and cleaner emissions than what you would get from a typical gas generator, you know, portable gas generator that you're going to bring along.
It's cool. It looks like they really put some nice features in. I'm looking at in the bed, there's an array of plugs available, mm-hmm. like 110 volt.
Yep.
And like, I mean, I don't know all the different ones, but it's
plug in your dryer.
Yeah. I mean, plug in my coffee maker right there.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going camping, you know, you can you know, plug in your coffee maker and, you know, your TV and whatever other stuff you want.
That doesn't sound like camping.
I mean, I love the idea of tailgating with this. Yeah. You know, whenever we can go and watch sports again.
Well,
it's a really thoughtful redesign. And I think that's what sets it apart is the thought that they put into it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one other thing that's, you know, under the skin that you're not going to see, at least initially, is the new electronic architecture. So this truck has the same electronic architecture as the Mach-E, what Ford's calling their Network Vehicle 2 architecture. So, you know, currently, you know, vehicles like this typically have 75 to 100 discrete computers scattered around, you know, electronic control units scattered around the vehicle to power all the different systems. With this new architecture, they've scaled that way down and consolidated that down and have several much larger, more powerful domain control computers that they call, one of which is for all the driver assist features and things like that. And because of the way this is architected, you know, like the Mach-E, this will have support for full over-the-air software updates.
Nice.
Which means one of the features that's going to be available on this is Ford's new Active Drive Assist system, which is also coming to Mach-E, which is their hands-free driver assist system. Very similar, same basic concept as GM Super Cruise. It's got infrared driver monitor cameras to watch you to make sure you're watching the road. It's geofenced. It's got, you know, maps of divided highways, and it'll limit you to using it on divided highways. But you can go completely hands off. You just have to watch the road and be ready to take over. That software is going to be available middle of next year. But from start of production, you'll be able to get what they call the active prep package, which adds extra sensors on there. So you get extra radar sensors, get the driver monitor system, things like that. And then when the active drive assist stuff is ready, you can get an OTA update to turn on that functionality. And then they've promised that they'll be doing other functional updates for the system as well over time. They said for the Mach-E, they've talked about, you know, being on a cadence of about every 6 weeks for doing various kinds of updates to the vehicle, and the F-150 is probably going to be similar.
Solid update in truck land. That's super competitive.
So. Yeah. Going to be a very interesting year for trucks. And then, you know, later next year, there will also be a fully battery electric version of this.
Cool.
I mean, it's just going to make the current F-150 plummet in price, right? Because everybody's going to want the new one, which is not what's going to happen, because I decided to move my car search from E-Class wagons to now HD pickup trucks. And they're impossible to find unless they've been beaten to death.
There's a Silverado 3500 in my neighborhood for sale.
Yeah?
Yeah. Only 13 grand.
Does it have rocker panels left? That seems to be...
Seems to. I didn't see any significant rust on it. It's a dually.
Rust out. Yeah, that's a little much. I almost I almost went and test drove a Ram 3500, and that has a solid front axle. And it was priced right, and it was clean. And it's just like, that is so much more truck than I actually need. but we'll talk about the truck search as it continues.
Well, let's dive into a couple of listener questions then.
All right.
So first one. Would buying a five-year-old, never winter-driven BMW 335i help with its reliability over one that's driven in winter? Does winter driving really affect anything mechanically? Dan?
Winter driving melts your car, but it doesn't really affect anything mechanically so much as you have to deal with the effects of corrosion. So where you're going to find winter driving issues is stuff like the braking system, you know, rotors and calipers and brake lines tend to really bear the brunt of it, because that stuff gets caked on there and sits. And then just corrosion underneath. I honestly don't think that a car that hasn't been driven in the winter is necessarily going to be any better than something that has been. It may be less prone to corrosion again. So you got to like check it for rust in the body. But you're talking about a car that sits all winter. And so that means that it could get infested by mice or just, you know, depending on how it's stored, that's not good for it either. So,
well, you know, and depending on where it is, you know, FF6, who sent us this question, doesn't say where he is. So, you know, if it's in a southern state, you know, then it may be driven year round, just never driven in winter. I agree with you, Dan. I think, you know, winter driving, you know, has its own issues, mostly around corrosion. But I think the real problem you have with a used BMW, the reliability problems have nothing to do with winter driving.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the 335i, so did he say what year?
He says five years old, so about a 2015. So it's going to be the previous generation, the E. Like
F-36?
No, F-36? 36?
Yeah,
something like that.
I'm trying to remember. It went EFG, right? So
yeah.
It went from E90. So it could be an E90, but I think it's probably
F70. Is it F70?
F30.
F30, whatever. F30. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. It's the previous generation.
I honestly buy on condition and just check carefully. It doesn't really matter when it's been driven. It's engineered to be driven in that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's more how many miles are on it. I mean, my mom had, she had a 5 Series wagon. She never got above 40 miles an hour. You know, when I took it, it broke down every time. You know, trying to fluff up the engine and, you know, flush it out and the whole thing. And it was just, and the bottom line was the car just wasn't driven the way that it was supposed to be driven. So I think that the miles make a big difference. And sometimes the lower miles are more of a red flag than slightly higher miles.
Yeah. And And, you know, if you want to really learn more about the joys of driving an older, you know, used BMW, I highly suggest listening to a number of episodes of the Accidental Tech Podcast, where our friend of the show, Casey Liss, who formerly owned a 2008 or 9 330i, describes in great detail, excruciating detail on numerous occasions, his joys of driving that car or owning that car, right up until the bitter end when he finally got rid of it in favor of a Golf R. And I'll drop a link in the show notes to episode 290, where he talks about the transition from the BMW to the Golf R. And you can hear all about that.
And when we say bitter end, we mean bitter.
Oh, yes.
Clear table for one.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
One more. My local GM dealer, this is from Eric White. My local GM dealer has a new 2019 Buick Regal Tour-X for $11,000 off MSRP. They've had it for nearly a year. It's a tempting deal, but is it worth it? I like wagons and their practicality, but how is the Tour-X? Yes, take it. Don't wait. Go get it now.
Really? You guys are that positive on that car?
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
It's great.
Yeah. It's you know, it drives really well despite it, you know, having too much ground clearance. I think it looks great. It's it's quite roomy inside. You got lots of cargo space in the back there. It's a wagon, so you know, what more could you ask for?
And no, it's true. It sounds like it's a great deal. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I went on the reveal on the launch a couple of years ago out in Colorado, and it was great. And from a wagon standpoint, I think it's terrific. I like the ride height a lot. I like having just a little bit higher ride. Somebody owns one in my neighborhood, and it catches my eye every time it goes by.
It is, yeah. It is a handsome car. I'll give it that. Like, I honestly, I haven't driven one. So get on it, GM.
Yeah. Before they're all gone.
Before it goes away, yeah.
It's not going to be like Saab, where, like you were talking about the 9.4X earlier, like that. The problem with that is, like, you crack a windshield, it's totaled because you just can't get one. I don't think the Regal Tour-X is going to be like that.
The mechanical bits, you know, are, you know, mostly the same as what you find, you know, in a bunch of other GM cars, even though this one's built in Germany, you know, by Opel,
which is now Peugeot.
Yeah. You know, it's got the same 2-liter 4-cylinder that you'll find, you know, and the 9-speed transmission that you'll find in that XT4 and a bunch of other GM transverse engine cars. So you're not going to have an issue getting parts for this thing. And, you know, of the three trim levels, you know, the Essence, which is the top trim level, with all-wheel drive, goes for $36,000. So, you know, even if it's an Essence, you know, $11,000 off of that, you're talking, you know, $25,000. If you can get a Tour-X for $25,000 or less, I'd say don't hold off. Go get it. You know,
that's a really good deal.
It is a really good car. And, you know, Rebecca and I both, you know, reviewed the thing, and I'll put links to both of those articles in the show notes. It's an excellent choice.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I think that's it. I think we're done.
One last thing. I did have a chance last Thursday before the reveal of the F-150 to spend 15 minutes chatting with Ford CEO Jim Hackett about some of the things that Ford's doing. His approach to human-centered design, as it's often called, and unleashing the talent within Ford, and had some interesting things to say. So I will, we'll roll out with that Jim Hackett interview right after this.
All right. That's kind of an important thing to tack on at the end there. By the way, talk with like the top guy at Ford. But that's good. So stay tuned and then keep dropping us questions and give us feedback. We'd love to hear from our audience. So we'll catch everybody next time.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
It's time to get that hernia repaired. And who better to do it than a leading clinical facility? JBR Clinical Research is currently recruiting participants for an investigational pain reduction medication study following hernia repair surgery. If you're between the ages of 18 to 75, you may qualify to receive study-related medication and no-cost hernia repair by a board-certified surgeon. You may even be compensated up to $2,000 for time and travel. To participate, call 801-261-2000 or apply at jbrclinicalresearch.com.
The Utah Newborn Safe Haven Law allows birth parents or someone they choose to safely and anonymously give up their newborn at any Utah hospital. There are no names, blame, or shame, only love and respect. Your privacy is important, and so is the future of the newborn. The baby will be cared for and placed in a loving and welcoming home. For more details and information, please visit UtahSafeHaven.org. That's UtahSafeHaven.org.